Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Dharma, incomparably profound and minutely subtle, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of eons. We now can see this, listen to this, accept and hold this. May we completely understand and actualize this Tathagata's true meaning. Well, again, everyone, welcome. Can everyone hear me? Okay. So tonight's teaching is called, or talk is called, Becoming the Mountains and Rivers. This summer, I spent a number of days hiking and camping in the Catskills and Adirondack Mountains of New York State. I saw the mountains, valleys, rivers, ponds, and lakes daily. It made me realize how the natural world is one of our greatest teachers. We don't often embrace this because our focus is primarily placed on teachings related to Buddhist fundamentals, such as the Noble Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, paramitas, mental discipline, ego, the self, and awakening, among other things. Seeing the mountains made me think of the Mountains and Rivers Sutra of Master Dogen, a sutra that uses the natural world as a Zen teaching. The sutra is also referred to as the Mountains and Waters Sutra. Dogen was a poet, mystic, and a great lover of nature. He's regarded as one of Japan's leading spiritual figures. He was brilliant. He built his primary monastery, a heiji, deep in the mountains, preferring the unspoiled forested hills and streams to the hectic lifestyle of Kyoto. To him, mountains and rivers are not simply mountains and rivers of metaphor. They are the true Dharma eye, the realized truth of the universe. In Taoism, mountains are viewed as living, breathing, sacred beings. In Chinese and Japanese culture, mountains have long been associated with meditation and purification, and gateways to the God realm, and sources of knowledge, discipline, and power. The Mountains and Rivers Sutra is part of Dogen's Shobogenzo. It is one of the most challenging of his sutras to read because he uses language of a poet to point to what cannot be described by logic. Reading the sutra is a real challenge. It is a koan in and of itself. And I will say right now that I make no claim in completely understanding it. So my comments tonight are more of a reflection on the sutra than a teaching. Shohaku Okamura, who is a Soto Zen priest and author of a number of books on Zen, including one on the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, has been studying the sutra for over 40 years. And he says that he still feels that he is far from understanding it. Because of its complexity, you don't hear the sutra discussed much in Zen. The Mountains and Rivers Sutra is unique in the sense that Dogen picks up concrete things like mountains, valleys, rivers, and clouds as a theme rather than abstract concepts such as time, mind, being, good and evil, Buddha nature, and so on, as he does in his other writings. Mountains and waters are physical, tangible things and are not abstract at all. However, he eloquently points to them as Dharma. So here's the first paragraph of the sutra. These mountains and rivers of the present are the manifestation of the way of the Buddhas and ancient sages. Each abides in its own Dharma state, exhaustively fulfilling its virtue. Because they exist before the eons of emptiness, they are living in the present. Because they are self before the appearance of any differences, they are free and unhindered in their actualization. Because the virtues of the mountains are high and broad, the spiritual power to ride the clouds is always entered through the mountains, and the capacity to follow the wind is ultimately liberated from the mountains. And then the second paragraph, or part of the second paragraph, an ancient master said, "The blue mountains are constantly walking. The stone woman gives birth to a child in the night. It is because the blue mountains are walking that they are constant. This walk is swifter than the wind. However, those in the mountains do not sense this, do not know it." Pretty straightforward, I think. Even after reading these two paragraphs, you know, a number of times, I think you'll probably be left scratching your head. You know, the whole Mountains and Rivers Sutra is similar in complexity to these two paragraphs. That's why I'm only going to focus on these two paragraphs. The Buddha taught that respect for all life and the natural world is essential. By living simply, one can be in harmony with other creatures and learn to appreciate the interconnectedness of all life and all that exists beyond the human realm. Buddhism has always had a strong reverence for all of existence, sentient and insentient, and this includes mountains, valleys, rivers, and streams. In the opening sentence to the sutra, Dogen establishes the fact that mountains and rivers are expressing the teachings of the Buddhas and ancient sages. In his Shobogenzo, the title that he gives to this sutra is Shanso Hikyo, which means, in Japanese, mountains and waters are sutra. In other words, the Mountains and Rivers Sutra is not about mountains and rivers at all, but that the mountains and rivers themselves are the sutra, the true Buddha Dharma, and that we should look at the mountains and rivers with the same attention and respect as if they were a direct teaching of the Buddha. When Dogen says these mountains and rivers of the present are the manifestation of the way of the Buddhas and ancient sages, he's speaking of non-duality. In other words, there's no separation between Buddhas or sages and the mountains. When we have made the mountains our own body and mind, there is no meeting them, since the mountains and sages are one reality. That the Buddhas and sages have entered the mountain means that there is no one to meet and nothing to be met. There is only the mountain itself. The appearance of the mountains is completely different when we are gazing at mountains from a distance than when we are in the mountains. In other words, the nature of the mountain is completely different when we have separated ourselves from it as observers than when we are part of the mountain with the whole body and mind. In Zen, the phrase body and mind is another way of saying intimacy with our whole being. When we are intimate with something, it no longer exists. And we no longer exist. There's no way to talk about it, to judge it, to analyze it, or to categorize it. This is precisely what happened to Master Dogen. There's a koan called Master Dogen's Enlightenment, and it's case 108 from Koans on the Way of Reality. And I'd like to read some parts of this koan because it relates to this dropping away of body and mind and intimacy, which is the underlying theme of the sutra. So this is the main case, word for word, right out of the koan. Dogen studied with Master Rujing. One evening, during the intensive summer training in 1225, Rujing shouted at a disciple, "When you study under a master, you must drop the body and mind. What is the use of single-minded intense sleeping?" Sitting right behind this monastic, Dogen suddenly attained great enlightenment. Immediately, he went to the abbot's room and burned incense. Rujing said, "Why are you burning incense?" Dogen said, "Body and mind have been dropped off." And then the part of the commentary. Body and mind fallen away is a realm in which there are no doctrines or marvels, no certainties or mysteries. It's just when you see there's not a single thing. Having reached this place, Dogen expressed it to his teacher. Rujing then approved, and Dogen bowed. Having passed through the forest of brambles, he then passed through the other side. Rujing said, "The dropping off is dropped." And then the capping verse of this koan. "The thought-cluttered bucket, bottom broken, neither water nor the moon remains." Thought-cluttered bucket, what that refers to is our being, physical, and our thoughts, our emotions. Neither water, water refers to the mind, constantly moving, nor the moon, moon referring to enlightenment. To understand intimacy does not mean to acquire information. Intimacy is the dwelling place of the great sages. It is realization, a quantum leap of consciousness in which our way of perceiving ourselves and the universe radically changes, and a new imperative begins to guide our actions. And this is what Dogen is getting at in the sutra. All phenomena, tangible and intangible, audible, inaudible, conscious and unconscious, are constantly expressing the truth of the universe. A stand of trees in the pine barrens, a bed of gravel in a river, the ocean breeze, a squirrel outside the zendo, all are ceaselessly manifesting the way. Dogen taught that because the mountains existed before the eons of emptiness, before the appearance of phenomena, they are present here and now. From a Buddhist perspective, humans are endowed with six senses, not five. In addition to sight, smell, taste, touch, and hearing, mind or consciousness is the sixth sense, and it is, and its object of perception is thought. This is important from a Zen perspective, because what we think is the same as action. So if we think of harming someone, it is the same thing as doing it. Right intention along with right view are the wisdom elements of the Noble Eightfold Path. When we look at how we perceive an object, we realize that without consciousness, cognition cannot take place. Sense object, and consciousness need to function together for us to perceive what we call reality. For example, in order for you to see me, your eyes need to be open and functioning. My physical form must be within sight, and your consciousness must be operating. My physical form must be within sight, and your consciousness must be operating again. These three components, sense, object, and consciousness, make the reality we call Emyo. Take any of them away, and I visually disappear. Master Dogen taught that what different types of beings see is different. Perception depends on a particular reference system. Different people perceive mountains differently. Likewise, different people perceive water differently. But what happens when we get rid of the reference system altogether? What remains? According to Master Dogen, the whole universe. Again, the second paragraph of the sutra reads, an ancient master said, the blue mountains are constantly walking. It is because the blue mountains are walking that they are constant. This walk is swifter than the wind. However, those in the mountains do not sense this, do not know it. So let me repeat that last line. However, those in the mountains do not sense this, do not know it. True, isn't it? The earth turns, time passes. We in the mountains, rivers, and trees are moving as the earth turns, but we are not aware of this constant flowing because we are not apart from it. The earth's turning is our turning. Dogen also tells us that the blue mountains are constantly walking. These mountains are completely walking and at the same time completely still, like human beings. He goes on to say that the blue mountains walk over the water, mountains that are massive, solid, rooted. Holding fast their change is hard to see. They are older than any of us. So in talking about mountains and waters and their function, Dogen shows us the nature of the real, the nature of mind, original mind. This is what poet Gary Snyder had to say about the Mountains and Rivers Sutra. And Gary Snyder was one of the Beat Generation poets, along with Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac. And he's more than a poet. You know, in addition to being a poet, he spent a lot of time in Japan and Asia studying Buddhism and Japanese culture. So he brings to the Mountains and Rivers Sutra some a lot of Zen background and Buddhist background. And this is what he says. Dogen is not concerned with sacred mountains or pilgrimages or spirit allies or wilderness as some special quality. His mountains and streams are the processes of the earth, of all existence, process, essence, action. Absence, they roll being and non-being together. They are, we are, and we are what they are. For those who would see directly into essential nature, the idea of the sacred is a delusion and an obstruction. It diverts us from seeing what is before our very eyes, plain thusness. When we were in Shemung, we had a sign that was right behind the altar, and Daiko remember this, and it gets to this concept or this idea of thusness, and the sign went on to say, it is what it is, thusness. And this is what Master Dogen has to say about water in the Mountains and Rivers Sutra. The river is neither strong nor weak, neither wet nor dry. neither moving nor still, neither cold nor hot, neither being nor non-being, neither delusion nor enlightenment. Solidified, it is harder than diamond. Who could break it? This being the case, we cannot doubt the many virtues realized by the river. We should then study that occasion when the rivers of the 10 directions are seen in the 10 directions. This is not a study only of the time when humans and God see the river. There is a study of the river seeing the river. The river practices and verifies the river. Hence, there is a study of the river speaking river. We must bring to realization the path on which the self encounters the self. We must move back and forth along and spring off from the vital path on which the other studies and fully comprehends the other. Self entering the self. There are endless ways of perceiving water. What water means to a black bear is different than what water means to a fish. To a drought-stricken area, rain is a blessing. To an area on the verge of flooding, additional rain is a curse. Rain for a farmer who has just sowed the seeds of a new crop is a blessing. For another farmer who is trying to dry his harvested hay, it's a nuisance. Rain coming into the zendo 2 years ago when the tree came crashing through the roof was not welcomed. And for Harry, a family friend who broke through the ice on the lake one winter day, the frigid waters of the lake took his life. Water is composed of two parts, hydrogen and one part oxygen, two odorless and tasteless gases. You bring them together and you get water. So are there different kinds of water? Or are there different ways of perceiving the simple molecule we call water? Master Dogen addresses the secrets of the river and of all water. The river is neither strong nor weak, neither wet nor dry, neither moving nor still, neither cold nor hot. Neither being nor non-being, neither delusion nor enlightenment. It is none of these dualities. It is seeing the river just as it is, thusness. People that live close to nature depend on the elements, and water is respected for what it is, life-giving and life-threatening, a force for good and evil. Hardly a day goes by without some news related to water, or lack of it. Heavy rains, floods, hurricanes, snowstorms, tsunamis, flash floods, droughts, water restrictions, beach closings, and the list goes on. Ask a young adult from the suburbs, what they understand water to be, and they'll probably say it's something that we drink that comes out of the tap. And an adult might describe water in terms of its physical properties as a colorless liquid. Of course, these descriptions are all true, but they leave out so much. How we perceive water depends on who we are, on the time and place in which we find ourselves, as well as our relationships to it. There's a saying in Zen by an ancient master that describes how his Zen practice matured over time. And this is what he said. At the first level on the path, I saw mountains as mountains and rivers as rivers. On the second level of the path, I saw that mountains are not mountains and rivers are not rivers. And on the third level, I saw once again, mountains were mountains and rivers were rivers. I think the first stage when mountains are mountains and rivers are rivers is the early stage of our practice. when we've started the journey to self-discovery and perhaps transformation. There are teachers to learn from and things to be learned. There is a mountain to climb, so to speak. Second, when mountains are not mountains and rivers are not rivers, is when we start to see things as they really are. When we start to see our true nature, we see everything is made up of other things. Nothing exists on its own. Those mountains are made up of rocks and trees and grasses and so many other things. Everything is connected to everything else. We become conscious that this applies to ourselves as well. It's at the third stage, when mountains are once again mountains and rivers are once again rivers, that we really understand. We reconcile the paradox. First stage, our feet are firmly planted on the ground. Second stage, we have our heads in the clouds. It's a period of great doubt. Third stage, we learn how to navigate both. This represents understanding. As the Heart Sutra says, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. When we have key insights into the nature of reality, we dwell in the world of emptiness and the world of form. In conclusion, Dogen's Mountains and Rivers Sutra speaks of an amazing universe, of the uninterrupted continuity of our true being in all that exists. According to him, water is liberated because it is empty of any fixed characteristics. Mountains are liberated because they too are empty of any fixed characteristics. His valleys are liberated for the same reason. They are free of concepts, expectations, or external attachments. And although there are many ways of seeing mountains and rivers, for the individual who's seeing it, there is only one way. Nothing else exists at that moment. Every single object that we perceive, we have created ourselves. Our founder, Shuzaku Rushi, would often say, the mind only sees what it's looking for. Zen practice is like peeling an onion. We strip away the unnecessary, a lifetime of baggage. Our practice works to remove the extra so that we get beyond the multitude of perspectives to the ground of being, where we realize and actualize that our true nature is free, unrestricted, and complete, and that it stands on its own, just like Dogen's mountains and rivers.